Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to episode 2 of Games at Work. This is Michael Rowe, and I'm with my co-hosts, Michael Martin and Andy Piper, and we're really excited to kick off our second episode of the Dead Corpse Rising... No, wait, that doesn't make any sense, does it? The dead body of the corpse of Dog Ear Nation rising again as Games at Work.
So, rising anew.
Rising anew. Just kind of floating around in the ether, actually. And we got a couple of exciting topics this week, so I'd like to turn it over to Andy.
Hello. Hi. It's a grey and miserable afternoon in early in the year in the UK. So, but I've been doing some fun things which are kind of playful and creative and interesting, which I think we'll probably talk about later on.
Cool. Michael, welcome.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks. Great to be back here again, too. And maybe we can be like a will-o'-the-wisp of the corpse of the undead body of Dog Ear Nation, kind of bobbing through the forest. It's cold and miserable here, too, actually, Andy, so I guess we're kind of all in sync on that.
Nah, not really. Not really. I was up in Boston yesterday. In Boston.
Yeah?
Did
you see the harbor?
I was right next to the harbor. It was 25 degrees outside Fahrenheit. And by the time I got back to North Carolina last night, it actually felt like a heat wave at 45 degrees. So and we're supposed to have warm in mid-60s tomorrow. Come on, this is winter.
Yeah, well, welcome to our winters, right?
Welcome to the Games at Work weather forecast.
So we make a game of our podcast, and we're
absolutely
making a game of this right now, too. So it's okay, who can out miserable one or another from the weather?
So Michael, why don't you run us through this show? Because we're lazy that way.
Yeah, and I know, and that's great. So guys, what we've done, or gals too, for our repeat listeners, or maybe our brand new listeners who have just discovered episode 2,
and welcome Chelsea for new listener. Yeah, right.
So we've got two big topics for us here that we kind of dreamed up since our last show. Our topics are, where's the game in it? And where's the work in it? So let me kind of explain this for a second. So our game of our podcast here was, hey, can we think of some ideas of work and let's try to apply a game to it and make the work a game, you know, a little Mary Poppins principle kind of stuff. Or on the flip side, that we'll hit this next, it would be the where's the work in it? So, you know, if we can imagine a game, how can that game then be applied to work? So
it's yeah, I think it's how can we ruin the fun that you have in any game by turning it into work?
Yeah.
So you might think you're really enjoying Click the Cow, but it's really work.
Yeah, but you know what? People buy it, you know, and why not, right? Ian knew what he was doing with this, apparently, or maybe he didn't. He kind of ticked off a bunch of people when that game ended.
Yeah.
That'll be a good thing for us to touch on, too. I saw that a while ago, and maybe we should, but where's the game in it? In this section, we had a couple of things, and the first one on our list here was ideation. So where's the game in ideation?
Yeah, so I came up with that earlier today because I thought it, you know, it made a lot of sense, right? Which is ideation is a formal process for coming up with ideas. It's also called brainstorming or other things like that. And one of the things that you try to do as a baseline is you say, okay, there are no bad ideas and we're going to just go nuts and come up with all these ideas. And at some point in time, you know, you time box it, we'll then start ranking and narrowing it down to stuff that may actually be a workable way of doing something, whatever that something is. And one of the things that I've personally found to be very effective in brainstorming is to add, you know, a little bit of that competitive nature in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a standpoint of, boy, you suck. That's a horrible idea. What crap are you coming up with? But, you know, driving the activities and, wow, look at all the stuff that Michael's coming up with. And I won't tell you which one. and if you think about the standard ways that a lot of the social games are driving stuff with leaderboards and ranking and reputations and everything else, those are all potential mechanisms to game an ideation session. And I saw yesterday that that Microsoft actually released badges in their development environment.
Really? As a
way
I didn't
see that. Yeah, as a way of gaming some of the development processes. And I'll find that link and throw it into the show.
Oh, yeah, I'd love
you
to
should.
See it.
You should, because we're keen to see that.
Yep. But so that was kind of, you know, the thought around ideation turning into a game. But, you know, what do you guys think? I mean, it sounds like, personally, it's something that we do naturally anyway, right?
You know, I struggle with a couple of things in this conversation as we're having it. First of all, the term ideation, because as you mentioned, it can easily be called just brainstorming or coming up with ideas. I don't quite. Another podcast I listen to, which is a very funny and entertaining and informative one called
Unlike
Off
this
the
one.
Wall Post, which is, well, I was going to say it's slightly less family friendly than this one. So they have a segment on particular words of a particular that are, you know, rubbish words,
vernacular.
Let's call them.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Think of another word for rubbish, and they have a begins with that would kind of be alliterative with words. Anyway, so they have a section on that, and I've actually in the past proposed ideation as one of those. Anyway, so I don't have a problem, I guess, with the idea of encouraging people to brainstorm more effectively or contribute more. I think, you know, as part of kind of any crowdsourced effort, you need participation for that to be successful. And as we found, typically you need one or two more active people who seed, you know, the audience or really drive the activity. And then they also need to be very inclusive to make sure that as people, you know, do start to gain confidence and come forward, that they have, you know, that their ideas get included. But I don't know about this whole, and I'm going to use another one of these rubbish words, gamification idea of of doing this.
Ooh. Because, I thought you said you're going to leave if anyone said that.
Yeah, I know. I've just said it myself. And I did. I was really interested, Michael, from what you've just said, and I need to look this up about Microsoft adding badges and achievements to their
Visual Studio
environment. Well, that's just weird. I mean, certainly WordPress, which I use, WordPress.com, they've added a kind of achievements leveling up idea whenever you post more, and you know, as you add more posts, you gain points. And I don't really know the point of it, to be perfectly honest. And I know that a couple of the enterprise social platforms have also recently announced or had plugins that enable this kind of stuff as well. Do we really think, you know? Whilst I get it from a genuine gaming perspective, you know, you have the, you know, the bragging rights kind of concept. But do we really think that integrating this kind of capability through every single facet of life is going to help us?
Absolutely not.
No.
Because I think it's such overkill in some ways. I mean, and you know, we're chatting at the same time as we're talking about, you know, help systems and help boards where there's reputation. That makes sense, because you know that if, you know, user 23XR47 posts something about the problem that you're working on.
That guy. He always annoys me, XR2437.
But he actually knows what he's talking about, right? But if a different user who has no reputation posts, then you are somewhat suspect or less reactive to the answer. However, in every single thing that you do, I mean, I know there's, as you were mentioning, you know, various corporate systems that are adding badges to capabilities. It's like, you know, how many stinking badges do we need? I mean, we are federales. We don't need no stinking badges.
Well, maybe you are. I don't know. I'm you know, undercover. So a couple of quick things from my input on this one. So the first one is on the notion of brainstorming. Brainstorming is by its very nature to me a game, right? And it can be played in a variety of different ways. It can be the, you know, get as many great ideas as you can out of the table and then winnow them down. It can be maybe a nasty game of the that's a horrible idea. We don't want to talk about that anymore. Or it can be even a little bit more structured, really, as a game itself. So friends of mine wrote a book on this topic, and they called it Game Storming. So Dave Gray, James McAnufo, and others made a book on how to apply gaming kinds of constructs into into brainstorming activities. One of the ones that I really like from this, the game is called a pre-mortem. So I think we've all been involved in post-mortems before. And that's the after-the-fact dissection of what went wrong on a particular environment. So the pre-mortem game would be, all right, let's imagine all the things that could go wrong before it happens, and let's come up with some mitigation plays against them. And while, you know, you could say, well, Michael, that's a risk management activity. You're right, it is. But it can be done as a game, and it can be played, and you have your time limits, and you kind of enter into that game world. You play the game by the rules, and then you leave that game world, and you can enter a new game, or you could take advantage of what you just created. So I'm yeah, missing some of the good conversation here in the chat.
I think it would be good, since you mentioned that you know Dave and James and et cetera, let's get them on the show. I think we should have them on the show in the next couple of episodes.
I was talking to James just yesterday. So, yeah, this is another nice connections. I will do that. All right. So, ideation, brainstorming, games around that. So there definitely seem to be games in that. How about the concept of online banking? That was
a horrible idea.
You don't like to play a game with online banking?
No.
You wouldn't like to see, like, you know, a little piggy getting, you know, coins dropped into it every time you decided to save something, or
nope.
You wouldn't want to have a competition of could you save more than Andy on a particular day or week and have it be a sort of headed thing?
Nope,
not with our respective bean traders and Starbucks addictions.
Exactly. See, that would be a negative incentive game because it would depress me, right?
Well,
so it's a game.
You could see who could spend more on coffee.
But you know, I do think an interesting game would be and I won't give it the name other than to say it's Stuff for Git, which would be around source code management games. You know, managing who's doing better coding stuff and actually efficiencies and the if you check in less on a module with less defects, that's better than if you check in more. And I'll let you come up with the name. I just chose Git because it had a nice rhyming word with it. That would be a great name for a game.
So actually, interested you say that because as you know, and as listeners to our former podcast will know, I'm very involved with kind of mobile and embedded messaging. And someone has just built a module for Bazaar, BZR, the source code control system, that works with our messaging system. So he can basically, as people commit code to the repository, can have little messages sent to his little Arduino, and that gets then goes to a little controls a glowing orb, which will obviously light up more if you know more code's being committed. So
well, yeah, kind
of, it's not exactly the same idea because you're talking about more achievement kind of basis.
But, yeah, but that would be kind of like a heat map of what are the areas of an application that are having more development on it, where are you driving functionality or potentially bug fixes, et cetera. I think that's
indeed
a really great
indeed
idea.
You can do it, exactly. You can do that kind of thing. So
So it's a little bit like when you tip the bartender a dollar bill and they ring the bell.
I don't know that game. I don't go to bars.
Well, Michael, you should.
I should. Hey, let's go right now. What time is it?
Hey, it's 11:11 at 11. Hey, what day is it? No, never mind. Inventory management. Inventory management. So where's the game in that? You know, a little bit of hide and seek, perhaps. You know, trying to find that stock part. You know, is it in this bin? Is it in that bin? Who can find it faster?
Who cares? It's like, where's Waldo?
Well, yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. What you know, part of the fun of games and is that there's the human element to it. So if we're talking about parts bin, you know, part number substitution, location of some object in a warehouse, probably not nearly as much fun in that necessarily.
So let's think about that game for a second. How many of us on this call, on this podcast, have worked in an industry and actually gone through a inventory exercise?
Ooh.
Yep.
Mysticata.
We have Dos. Andy, have you ever done that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, to be honest.
So one of the things that you do in any type of inventory-based business is you have to do an inventory periodically to ensure that you have no shrinkage, as they call it.
Oh, right, yeah, sure.
It's kind of like you take the business and you jump it into some cold water and you make sure there's no shrinkage. And so what happens is this is a reconciliation activity, and it tends to shut down the business for some period of time. And the more parts that you have in your inventory, the longer that shutdown is. And it costs money, it's tedious, and you have double checks and all this other stuff, right?
Yep.
So making that fun... what I heard from you, Michael, is a scavenger hunt idea as an example.
Well, yeah, you have like the golden socks.
So,
and whoever finds the golden socks wins a pie.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking there's that option, right? You know, the ability to say there's something that you're going to stick somewhere in the inventory, and you end up having a search to find it, and as part of that search, you have to count this other stuff.
Yeah, it's
and
like
you
a king
probably,
cake.
You probably yep. want to do multiple things, because as soon as someone finds one, the game disappears if you only do one. So the king cake, great idea.
Yeah.
The other idea around a scavenger hunt would be, how do you ensure accuracy, not just speed?
Ooh.
Right? So thinking through gaming that, accuracy assumes that you have a baseline of data, i.e. how many you had last time.
Yep. How much you've sold and taken in.
How much you've sold and taken in, and you end up with some kind of almost puzzle. And I'm just thinking out loud for a second, like a puzzle map where you're trying to fill in the things. And every once in a while, you get a puzzle and they're missing pieces, right? And so you have to either make those pieces yourselves or resign yourself to having gaps in your puzzle. So is that a good thing? And you have a puzzle one and you have to be able to reconcile what's different?
Maybe so.
But these are so it's looking at the inventory problem in a very, very different way. The scavenger hunt, like I said, is interesting. I think it drives speed and it causes people to look as much as they can in different places. But the question then becomes accuracy. How do you drive that? And I think that's a good discussion we should have in our comments for this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are people that play, you know, scavenger hunt kinds of games like this where speed and accuracy are both critical, right? You need to get
geocache.
Well, geocache is
imagine a geocache with RFID chips.
Maybe so, but where I'm heading with this is that both speed and accuracy are required for the teams to win in, you know, these kinds of games. So it could be built in so that both are required. In fact, you might have multiple teams competing to get both speed and accuracy, and you can have multiple you know, treasures and waypoints along the way that when you get them, those are multipliers for your score.
Yeah. Cool.
Ah, there we go. There's a game in it.
There's a game in it. Amazing.
We found one, finally.
Yes.
there's another one on our list here, and that's cleaning out your fridge. So Andy, where's the game in that? What do you think?
Can't see one. You guys tell me.
There's no
way.
One.
There are tons of games in that.
How?
Well, there's a game of, you know, how guess what's in the Tupperware container.
Oh no.
There's the hey, let's post pictures of what we found in the darkest recesses of the fridge.
Actually, crowdsourcing the what through through Instagram would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it? Do you remember, maybe not, but I'll say it anyway, there was a very old Saturday Night Live skit back with Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd. So that's back in the 70s for those of you who weren't born and are listening to this show. And Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd walk out onto an empty stage and they look at the audience and the first one goes, what the hell is that? And then the other one goes, what the hell is that? And they just keep going back and forth asking, what the hell is that? And then finally, Steve Martin looks at Dan Aykroyd and he goes, oh, I know what that is. And they walk off. Then they walk back on and go, what the hell is that? And that would be the game. You could have a clean your fridge game called What the Hell Is That?
And you could crowdsource it.
Well, you could just call this segment of the show.
What the hell is he talking about?
Scraping the barrel. What the hell is this?
Here's one. You know, how much recycling could you do out of your fridge? Right.
We apologize to all our listeners for this very random rat hole down which the show has gone around domestic maintenance.
Yes. All right. So let's go to the gem of the where's the game in it?
There's a gem.
We shall see, won't we? Mm-hmm. We have one rather interesting one, Andy. You could set up here for us. So take us away.
Lego.
That would be the one.
That's a relief. Phew.
Where's the work in that?
Well, so I mean, yeah, I mean, I recently, and I've blogged about this at length, and we'll include the link on the website, posted about the fact that I suddenly had a desire to get some Lego, and I grew up with Lego, but that was 20 years ago, and so I hadn't really touched any for quite a long time. Well, I'd seen it in stores, but I hadn't really played around with it, and I kind of justified it in a number of ways. One of them is to kind of use little Lego dioramas as part of my presentations, and I started to do that recently anyway, using other photos that were Creative Commons licensed on Flickr. It also stemmed from seeing a presentation recently from a guy called Ken Burke, who's Monster Knight on Twitter, who's invented this electronics platform called the Nanode, and he described that as kind of Lego for electronics, digital Lego. And I also recently heard Ian Livingston, who many people will have heard of. He invented the Fighting Fantasy books in the 80s. Mm-hmm. He started Games Workshop, and he's the life president of Eidos, and he's been involved in the UK with the campaign around digital literacy and really getting a much better education around technology into schools. And he talked about the fact that we shouldn't be teaching kids in what we call I think information computer technology or something. ICT is what it's currently called in the UK schools. Microsoft type productivity tools, desktop tools, because seriously, kids don't need
no one education. Needs to learn how to program anymore. It's all going to be done automatically, right?
But so absolutely, that's that's the point. You should be learning to program. You should be combining that with art. So he talked about Digital Meccano. So anyway, last weekend I decided that I was going to buy myself some Lego, and it became a bit of a binge in the end, because not only did I buy a bucket of random bits of Lego, I then ended up buying some Star Wars sets and some various other things. And as an adult, I really found that it was very stimulating to actually have the experience of opening the boxes and taking the pieces out and actually building the models and seeing how well designed they are, how well they fit together, how every piece has a place. So, I just got very enchanted by, as an adult, the experience, not just of the toy element and the entertainment, but really the beautiful design, even though it's not the same kind of design, sleek design that you get in an Apple product. But it is nevertheless genius design, really. It's beautifully put together. So I'm not really sure where I was going with that discussion, other than I think that there's a lot to be said for using kind of toys and games of that kind to remodel the way we think about design and prototyping and building.
Yeah, Andy, I actually like that a lot. I was in a meeting yesterday all day, and we actually took the conference room table and covered it with various different game pieces. Someone brought in the Dungeon Master board set for Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, where you can lay out maps and had all these little figures of orcs and knights, etc. I brought in finger soccer, a little soccer mat with little shoes that you put on your fingers and a ball. We had all kinds of different things. And the purpose was, as we were going through the different thoughts and ideas for the project that we were working on, we actually leveraged the toys in the room to talk about how you would implement these things. So
were you playing games at work?
I was playing games at work very, very on purposely to get people to think beyond traditional IT thought processes. And it was actually loads of fun. And people that I thought were going to be, you know, traditional stodgy old developers jumped in and became kids again in the discussion. And when it really drove the thoughts and the ideas for the project way beyond where I thought we normally would have gone.
That's really, really cool. And you know, that's not uncommon to use the elements like that as brainstorming facilitation tools, right? Just having out, you know, the squishy balls and other things out on the table help people do something with their hands and give you a sense of color and other thoughts to help spring you in different directions. So I think that's really great. That's awesome. And then Andy, the thing I'd want to also add to yours is, while I'm a huge fan of minifigs and Lego building blocks and the like, I recently discovered nanoblocks as well. And there are a couple of different websites out there on them, and maybe we'll give a couple of links to them here too. But these are even smaller building blocks out of Japan, where you can build a copy of Neuschwanstein, the castle, the space shuttle. You can build various other things. In fact, the one site I just saw here has the battleship Yamato as one of the things you could build. And they're kind of fun too. And just to spend a little while to construct them. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Very cool.
Good. Well, I'm glad that I made some sense. That's good.
so some pluses there. All right, well, guys, let's switch gears a little bit and go to the where's the work in it,
or I think we actually have a good solid half hour show.
Well, then
we can do where's the work in it as the next episode, and that way
I think that would be a very good idea.
Yeah.
All right, then.
So guys, so switch and kind of wrap it into that and say, hey, yeah, this has been fun. Let's do that next time, and then we'll just hit the exposing games very quick at the end.
Okay. Awesome. All right, and in 3, 2, 1. So I think we've come up with quite a few things here that show where's the game in it, and those are some fun things that we've talked about. So we have one last quick element that we wanted to talk about today, and we'll save the where's the work in it for our next episode. This one's on exposing games, and Andy, I think you were the one who found this one too, about HTML5. Walk us through it.
Well, I've been following the new stuff happening on the web for ages now. HTML5, which is really an umbrella name for a series of technologies around both the markup HTML, the styling CSS, and also the animation that comes under CSS as well, presentation, and then also the underlying ability to make things interactive, which comes via JavaScript. Got a lot of friends in the web development community here in London and in the UK and elsewhere, and I also listen to some great podcasts like 5x5 TV's The Web Ahead, which is really, really interesting. Came across, I think it was Rob Hawkes on Twitter, who's a Mozilla guy who's really awesome on some of this new next generation stuff, tweeting about this particular implementation of a complete game in pure HTML5 technologies, and the game is in fact Command and Conquer, which is, you know, it's not the first game of its kind. I mean, there was the Dune game, I think, that came before Command and Conquer, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. I think Dune 2 was before that. And there are a bunch of other kind of real-time strategy-type games around. And, of course, they have continued to evolve in compiled code real gaming systems. I know I've got Halo Wars, which is just another RTS in the Halo world on my Xbox. But this is entirely in the browser. You can play the whole thing without needing any plugins, without needing any additional binary code to be downloaded. It's the complete original Command & Conquer inside the web browser. And really, I just noticed that, you know, around the topic of the new podcast and also around the thought process that says, you know, the devices we're using are just containers now. You know, they're increasingly just the browser itself is just a container for content, and a game is just more content, and it's another way of interacting. So I was just really impressed and excited by that.
Yeah, I think that is pretty cool, Andy. And one of the things that did immediately got me thinking down is a couple of years ago we were looking at companies that were trying to expose games via browsers by basically mirroring and streaming a desktop. And now we have capabilities like HTML5 where you can remove all that overhead and actually just expose the code as the game, right? Which is much, much more exciting.
The only thing I thought about when I was thinking about Command & Conquer in the web browser was, you know, it's games at work, but don't play it at work. Make sure you get your work done.
Nah. But the things you can do with gameplay, right?
Yep.
People tend to think game programming is hard, right? And it can be.
It can be, yeah.
But being able to say, but even something like that can be done in a container, just as you said, Andy, a very simple tool. So you're not deploying the, you know, 800 megabyte game install for that work onto every desktop or machine in an enterprise or in a company or, you know, whatever. You're actually exposing it in a way that's very consumable and minimal footprint, which is actually really exciting stuff. It just shows you how this is becoming more and more available. And I'm actually going to wait until a little bit later to launch that link. Because I do like Command & Conquer.
That's really awesome. I didn't play Command & Conquer before, but I knew about it. I was much more of a Civilization guy, but that's the timeline was, I'm sure, much, much afterwards. But incredibly cool that this can all happen inside a browser.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I think that's closing time for us here. So we will call episode 0000002 in the bag.
Triple quadruple zero? Oh, my God. I need to add more zeros.
We need to add a lot of zeros. And we need to go out and get some badges, apparently. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, have a wonderful weekend, and thanks to our listeners. And we're looking forward to getting more comments, ideas, and thoughts from all of you directly on the blog, Twitter, email, smoke signals, and friend requests.
Yep, and we're still working to set our feeds up correctly. So in the very near future, we will be shifting this to a new feed, and we'll let you know at least one episode in advance of that.
Exactly. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ.
And then lick it.